How did you get started?
After I graduated from Marquette, I was planning on going to law school to Paul down the street. And I really had nothing to do for that summer before I was going to start at DePaul. And my parents knew some floor broker on the floor of the CBOE who was looking for someone for the summer. I went down there and it was completely eye-opening. It was unbelievable. It was such fun. And I learned a lot. Halfway through my second semester of law school, the guy that I'd worked for on the floor called me and said, "Our business is booming. I need another body. Put you on a seat, I'll pay you this." And I said, "When do I start?"
What did you trade?
Trading volatility in and out. And I would scalp the stock against positions. IBM was very liquid, easy to get in and out of stock. The options were fairly liquid at most of the strike prices. I tended to be front month, second month guy. Didn't really care about, you know, third month out. A few hundred either way, maybe 400 or 500, you know, in total.
Did you like calls or puts?
Calls traded a lot more. Puts were your friend. That was the maximum on the floor. I liked calls more, but you know, always had to have some puts in the back pocket.
Were you a bear or a bull?
I was more bullish, probably, than I should have been.
What was it like trading on the floor?
It was challenging, but I certainly looked forward to it pretty much every day. It was a blast. I made some good friends that I still keep in touch with to this day.
What skills did you need to be a floor trader?
A certain amount of brashness, the ability to ask the right questions. Obviously a voice, you know, that got to be a little old.
What was the economic opportunity like?
Well, it was great in terms of the bid ask, right? I mean, there certainly wasn't, you know, I'm down there mid 80s to early 90s, and there certainly wasn't the amount of regulation in terms of what you couldn't do. And that's, you know, that's where I think it was beneficial to be on the floor. Bid ask, you'd see the book, you knew where the orders were in the book. If something, you know, transpired and you could reach for the book or sell the book, that's nice to know. That's good to have. So you were clearly a step ahead of, you know, the public or the institutional guys.
Who were the big traders when you started?
There was a guy named Irv Kessler who was just brilliant. You could just tell, you know, that he knew the numbers going on in his head. So a lot of people just kind of watched him.
Who were your mentors?
A guy named Peter Michaels that I worked for. He taught me a lot about spreading. I would stand with him in the pit, and that was the bulk of my knowledge, watching him. Interestingly, the first day that I worked for him, he was backing a trader at Teledyne, and Teledyne had some earnings issue or some bad news of some sort, and lost $1 million that day. So that was a little bit eye-opening.
What were openings like?
I didn't necessarily participate well in the opening, just because, for a number of reasons, I don't know, I just wanted to see where things would settle out first and just kind of calm down a little bit. But they tended to be chaotic because, you know, trying to open all the different strikes and the stock's moving one way or the other, and the strikes that have already been opened, people are trying to, you know, make business or trade based on that. So it was a little challenging.
What happened on the floor on a slow day?
A couple times, clerks were challenged to try and drink a whole gallon of milk in an hour without, you know, vomiting. And I distinctly remember one guy did not do well. And he actually launched on the salad bar in the cafeteria. So, you know, it was just infantile, kind of juvenile things like that. As a pit, once we sent we got a plane ticket and sent a clerk to Pennsylvania to buy a lottery ticket when it's $3 or $4 million. And there weren't very many lotteries at the time. And I think he came back with like a $2 or $4 winner. So, I mean, just, you know, things like that.
Did you witness any illegal practices?
There were guys that traded after the bell. That was probably the most common thing. A new guy came in. Kind of a short but stocky guy trying to make markets, and one of the older guys challenged him. You know, he was in there for a couple weeks, and they'd scream and yell at each other and point fingers at each other's face. And The older guy at some point said, all right, let's go outside. And the new guy's like, hey, you know, I don't think you really want to do this. And was very reluctant to do so. They went outside. The newer guy had black belt in karate and was over in like a matter of moments.
What was your best day trading on the floor?
I was in the IBM pit in crash of 87 and had a huge, much bigger position than I should have. Zeroing it out, I was net long one put, which was wonderful at the time. I think it was $106,000 winner, but obviously, you know, you can't get out at all the mark prices and such. So that was interesting. But I was more of kind of a grind it out kind of guy, not a big swinger.
What was your worst day like?
Probably the 89 crash in October. United Airlines, there was talks of a leveraged buyout, and then that fell apart, and that sent the market south. I think the Dow Jones was down 7% that day. I was trading in IBM, and my recollection, it was expiration Friday. And I had some out-of-the-money puts that were, you know, 20 bucks. I didn't worry about them because they were going to go out worthless. Well, turned out not to be the case. And I still remember a guy next to me buying a book, and everyone just sort of looked at him, all these garbage puts, looked at him, and like, what are you doing? And he goes, this thing's going a lot lower. I mean, that's one of those things that just sit in my head, and he made a fortune. IBM had earnings, and the day before, I ended up much longer than I wanted to be at the end of the day, the day before. Earnings came out next day. Didn't help me. Stock, I think, opened down about 7.5%.
What is your worst memory of the floor?
Probably the 87 crash. I was relatively, so I was 28. And it was scary to me to see older, more established guys, you know, panicking and, you know, lines at the bank to get money out and lines in the clearinghouse to, you know, facilitate that same thing to get their money out. And there were all kinds of rumors, you know, back and forth on the floor, and you wouldn't see people for like months at a time. And I knew at the time that it was a big deal and that I probably should have left, but subsequently, you know, I wouldn't have met my wife and a lot of other things wouldn't have happened.
What would you change?
I'd probably speak to more people on the floor as to what the experience would be, the ups and downs. And I would certainly would have liked to have brought some of my subsequent technical analysis knowledge to the floor. I think that would have been a huge help.
What life lessons did you learn?
Trust your gut. Relationships matter. Have a plan and have another plan. Self-discipline is absolutely crucial. And let your no's be no's and your yes's be yes's.
What caused you to stop trading on the floor?
I was just tired of it. I was tired of screaming. I was tired of yelling. It was 1994. Just got married. We just bought a house. So I figured I'd do, you know, three major life changes pretty much all at the same time. Get them over with.
Tell us about the heart attack.
I was having a conversation with my son in his room. Mid-sentence, I slumped against the wall, fell to the floor. My son had just turned 16. My daughter was in the house downstairs. She was 12 at the time. My wife was in the city. He called 911, told the operator that he did not know CPR. The operator directed him what to do until a police officer arrived and the EMTs arrived. We were fortunate that it was on a night in February that there was no snow. It was relatively warm and we're maybe 3 minutes from the nearest police and fire station. But interestingly, the state of Illinois had passed in January. My cardiac arrest was in February, legislation to allow EMTs to spend more time in the home when they're trying to revive someone. They were on the fifth try, shocking me. That would have been their last attempt if I didn't get a sustained beat. So that's a little sobering, you know, when you hear that they're that close. 11 days in the hospital, I have a pacemaker, was out of work for about 6 months, just trying to recover. And I'm happy to say that, you know, my health is good. And, you know, one of the things that my son and I have done, we've spoken to about 800 kids at Barrington High School. We show the video, we tell our story. And that's to get them to take their state mandated CPR education seriously. And we've seen that it's had a pretty good impact, because when they see, you know, a kid their own age that can do this, they pay a little bit more attention. And interestingly, my arrest was on Saturday night. I'd planned on going into the office on Saturday to catch up on some work, and my wife was insistent that I not do that. So I like to tell her that she saved my life, because if this had happened in the office, there would be nobody there. You know, I think about that a lot. It's been a big part of my life, obviously, for the last 3 years. And now I'm on the Illinois Advocacy Committee for the American Heart Association. I speak and write whenever I can to promote CPR training and AED awareness. That's my give back in terms of getting a second chance.